and welcome to another episode of the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Han, and in light of Tony Blair's big anti-Brexit speech last week, we wanted to find out how people were feeling about the former Prime Minister getting involved in the issue. That's why we brought on Kieran Pedley, the host of the Polling Matters podcast, which recently conducted a survey on the popularity of past Prime Ministers. Aside from just Tony Blair, Tim chatted to him about other important issues like what makes a poll you can trust, and why we shouldn't really be too hard on forecasters that get something a little bit wrong. As always, if you enjoy the show and you want to hear more Brexit news like this, you can subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast, or find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Brexit Podcast.
And warm welcome to the show to Kieran Pedley from Polling Matters. Kieran, wanted to get you on because saw a tweet actually, which was a poll that you guys conducted in response to Tony Blair's big anti-Brexit speech at the back end of last week, and initially wanted to talk to you about that. Talk us through the results of your poll.
So on the Polling Matters podcast, one of the things that we've started doing recently is commissioning our own polls. It felt like the logical conclusion to what we do, which is talk about other people's polls. So we thought we might start doing some of our own as well. And we've been doing that with the polling company Opinion, who people will have heard of if they follow this sort of thing. So they actually do the polling, but we design the poll and the questions and that sort of thing. So this poll that you referred to was actually conducted a couple of weeks ago, so before Tony Blair's intervention. And we conducted it to look at the popularity of the prime ministers of the last 30 years, so Margaret Thatcher onwards, and to get public perceptions on whether they did a good job or a bad job in their time as prime minister. And at the time, we were interested in comparing perceptions of past prime ministers to perceptions of the current prime minister, Theresa May. And just to sort of outline some of the findings, when we originally discussed this poll, we were focusing on Margaret Thatcher and Theresa May because Margaret Thatcher had 40% saying that she did a good job as prime minister, which was some 14 points ahead of the next placed performer, which was David Cameron, with 26%. And in contrast, Theresa May has 39% thinking that she's currently doing a good job. So, you know, very much the honeymoon period continues. Now, it's not necessarily fair to compare a prime minister now before, you know, she's finished the job, as it were, before she's gone through the difficult process of leaving the European Union, to prime ministers that have finished their term in office and, you know, people are debating their legacy. But it's still a useful thing to do just to understand what people think. Now, on your question specifically about Tony Blair, obviously being one of the prime ministers of the last 30 years, we asked about him. And we found that 22% thought he did a good job, 49% thought he did a bad job. And he was second worst. Only Gordon Brown was worse than him in terms of his ratings. And part of the reason for that is that actually, as you might expect, Conservative voters like Conservative prime ministers and dislike Labour prime ministers. Labour voters dislike Conservative prime ministers, of course, but they also have a sort of lukewarm reaction to their own side. I think that may be partly to do with how the Labour vote has changed over the years and become that bit more Corbynista. So when I tweeted out that poll again in the aftermath of Tony Blair's speech, I was making the point really that, you know, as he seeks to contribute to the debate over Brexit, which he's, you know, perfectly entitled to do as a former prime minister, we have to bear in mind that, you know, his public his popularity is very, very weak at this time. And I guess, therefore, if you are someone that supports what he said, then it's a legitimate thing to question whether he's the right messenger for that message.
Yeah, that's a very good point. When you conduct the polls, are they completely random, or do you pick a certain number of voters for particular parties?
So it's a nationally representative poll of 2007 UK adults. And what you typically find with online polls, and again, this poll is conducted by Opinion Online, is that they'll have their own sort of panel of people that they go to. And there'll be several, you know, tens of thousands of people on that panel, if not hundreds of thousands. And, you know, what they do is they will select a sample that is nationally representative. So the right number of men, the right number of women, different age groups, different regions, and so on. But also one of the things that they do is try to make things politically representative. Now, each pollster will have a different way of doing things, but typically what they do is they'll ask people how they voted at the last general election, how they voted in the EU referendum as well, and they'll come up with some kind of methodology that looks to make sure you've got the right balance of Labour voters, Conservative voters, Leave voters, Remain voters, and so on. So that's kind of the approach that you take. Now, as we know from the polls in the past few years, it is difficult. It's a difficult thing to do, and sometimes you can go go awry. But I think I would feel pretty confident that, you know, public opinion on the past prime ministers of the past 30 years very much sees Margaret Thatcher as ahead of the pack, and, you know, the Labour prime ministers somewhat less popular. And I guess that's kind of reflected in the current state of the parties in voting intention polls at the moment, with the Tories, of course, very much ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. What? How many? How many people would be polled? What's given a number that makes it a credible poll?
Well, it's more. I mean, typically, what you'll find is it'll be about 2,000 or thereabouts. That's usually the number that you see. Although, if the poll is conducted by the telephone, it can sometimes be around more like 1,000, partly to do with cost. Within reason, what I would say is it's less significant the number of people that you survey, and it's more significant that you're getting a genuinely representative sample. One of the frustrations that people in the industry will have is that when people hold up a poll of, say, you know, 10,000 people and somehow assume from that because it's 10,000 rather than, say, 2,000, then that must make it, you know, five times more accurate, and that's not necessarily the case. But at the same time, you obviously do want to get sufficient numbers to have all those groups that I described earlier in a representative way, and therefore, you know, the rule of thumb tends to be 2,000. But if I was someone that really wants to scrutinize a poll that's been done, I'm not just interested in the sample size, as we call it. I'm interested in other things, the methodology, when the poll was taken, how the pollster has made it representative, and so on.
Yeah, the neutrality, I guess, of the pollster.
Mm.
So now we have this result, and Blair seems particularly unpopular. Do you think you're going to conduct another poll after his speech to see if that's made him more unpopular?
We might do, although our poll this week is focusing more around the issues related to the by-elections that are coming up on Thursday. So, of course, we have Labour defending seats in Copeland and in Stoke. So one of the things that we're doing this week is looking at whether voters think that the different party leaders are the right people or the wrong people to be leading their respective parties into the next general election. Now, we have a hunch as to what the results might be on that, given what we know about the popularity of Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn right now. But it will still be interesting. But we're also interested in what happens, what numbers we get back on Paul Nuttall, because if UKIP don't win in Stoke, and remember, everyone's been saying that, you know, Labour's northern, well, if you call Stoke the north, sort of northernish heartlands are vulnerable to UKIP, and they don't win, then he might come under pressure, particularly considering the campaign that he's fought. And one of the things that we're doing, and I guess this is a point I would add about our show, is the bit that makes us different is we try and put a new perspective on things and a more data-driven approach to things. So one of the things that we're looking to cut the numbers by is what everybody thinks, so the British public overall, but also what people that would definitely vote for a particular party or consider voting for a particular party would say, and compare how those different audiences think differently about these leaders. My hunch is what you might find is that diehard Labour voters really like Jeremy Corbyn, for example, but people that are on the fence about whether they might vote Labour perhaps are less convinced, and possibly similarly with UKIP as well. So I guess the short answer to your question is we will be revisiting Tony Blair in the future, but anticipating what the story is going to be this time next week, we're going to be focusing more on that.
Yeah, and so tell me a little bit more about the Polling Matters podcast. You painted quite a nice picture there, but it seems like do you look at topical events and then see where polling can bring more interest to those and then discuss it on the show?
Yeah, so we're a weekly podcast, and we started off in 2014 in the run-up of sorts to the general election in 2015. Myself and former colleagues and friends of mine, Leah Barassi and Rob Vance. And the idea behind it really was, you know, being politicos, we wanted to talk about the election and all the things around that, but also our unique perspective was around polls. So it will be data driven. We are trying to look at what the polls are saying about the latest issues, that maybe gives people a different perspective on them, and also brings in our professional expertise. But we aren't sitting there reading out numbers either. It's designed to be an accessible thing. You know, it's not designed to be something that you have to have a degree for to listen to or anything like that.
Yeah,
you know, we've been doing it since then. And, you know, one of the funniest things is, I mean, I didn't have many expectations for it going into after 2015, but then you, of course, had the Labour leadership contest. You then went into 2016 and had the Brexit referendum and Donald Trump, of course. So there's always something going on. And, of course, now we're starting to look at the French presidential election and Germany, of course, where the Social Democrats there look like they might unseat Angela Merkel. That's becoming increasingly likely even at this stage, although it's that's another story maybe. There's always something going on in politics, and you know, we try and give a new perspective on it. Sometimes it's reacting to the events as any political podcast would, but other times we're trying to get under the skin of the issues.
Now, this is probably a little bit cruel, but now, given you've mentioned you started in 2014, let's have a little bit of a look at your track record. So did you predict the Tories coming through? Did you predict Brexit? Did you predict Trump winning? And did you predict Corbyn being Labour leader?
Well, I mean, we weren't ourselves. It's important to say that we weren't ourselves on the podcast conducting opinion polls at that time. I think that, like everybody else, the 2015... So we were looking at using other people's data, if that makes sense. But, you know, I think 2015 was a bad year for the polling industry. I guess fair to say. We'll come on to sort of the later years soon. And look, we have to hold our hands up. You know, it was wrong. There was no excuses. It was a systemic problem that the industry had, and we've just got to be honest about that. You know, one of the biggest problems, I think, not just in polling, but in all sorts of industries, one thinks about the financial sector as well, is groupthink. You know, you think you've got things nailed down, everyone kind of agrees, and therefore you don't necessarily challenge your methodology and your approaches to things, and you're in a group of people that don't either. You know, we talk about bubbles a lot these days, don't we, of varying sorts. I think that was part of the industry's problem in 2015. So, I mean, I went into the election thinking that the Tories were going to win right up until the last month, where the polls were quite clear that didn't look likely to happen, and you know, we all got caught on the hop there. On Brexit, I think that the polling industry maybe gets a little bit of a unfair rap, actually. I think that if you look at the polls, there was a difference between telephone and online, and the online polls were pretty close to being right, and in some cases were right. So I talked about Opinium earlier, who we use for our polls. They called it 51-49 for Leave. Now, part of the problem, I think, at the time of the Brexit referendum again, was that, you know, there was a sort of failure of punditry. People were inclined to ignore the online poll that didn't fit the narrative of Remain winning, and then they were caught on the hop again. So the polling industry was criticised, and yes, there were some pollsters that got Brexit wrong as well, but I think there were some that got it right, so that's a bit unfair. On Trump, you know, I was someone that I called it a 2-point Clinton lead in the popular vote, which I was quite pleased with. But then what I didn't anticipate was that the Electoral College would go Donald Trump's way. And without getting too into the weeds of it, I think on the US presidential election, it's important that people realize it's a state by state contest. It's not a national election as such. And the polls did show a 3 or 4 point Clinton victory. 2 points is within that margin. That's perfectly acceptable. But then in terms of the state by state race, it was such a sort of geographical fluke, the way that Donald Trump was able to have these razor thin victories in these Midwestern states, and Hillary Clinton stacked up votes where she didn't need them and that sort of thing. So I kind of sympathize with a lot of the American forecasters like the Nate Silvers and others that maybe got that one wrong, because, you know, if you'd known a week before the election, by the way, Clinton's going to win by 2 points, you know, a sort of 1 in 4 chance of Trump winning was probably right. You know, it would have taken a really difficult sequence of events to happen. So I guess from a personal perspective, mixed bag. Corbyn certainly, you know, that was clear from very early on, going back to that from the first YouGov poll that he was going to win. The nature of the Labour electorate changing made that apparent. He wouldn't have won re-election, by the way, if the Labour membership had stayed the same. But, you know, they were very good at successful at recruiting their own his supporters to his cause, which is, you know, all in the rules, right? And it's all fair and square. So it's a mixed bag. And I think, you know, when we're making these when we're doing the podcast and when we're doing sort of other sort of data-driven analysis, it's important not to make it too much about predicting the future in my eyes and trying to sort of explain what the dynamics are and what could happen, because I think the media and many pollsters are obsessed with here's what's going to happen, whereas actually what's probably more useful is saying here are the issues at play, here are the things you need to consider, and then, you know, going from there. Because look, we don't have crystal balls. We have the data available to us. It's imperfect. When used properly, it's very useful. But you know, it isn't, like I say, it isn't perfect.
I guess the one thing is that, you know, just in the number of years you've been doing it, and the number of years polling's been about, and probably what's happened over the past couple of years made people sit up, and you were talking about that bubble mentality. So the methodology has probably had to progress and is advanced, and it's now improved more than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an ongoing challenge. I mean, part of it's quite wonkish, and I don't really know how much detail you want me to go into. But I think the problem is, you know,
you can get the word wonkish into a podcast, and that's
well, that's always, I think, yeah, with podcasts, that's always a good one to get in there. I mean, look, you know, the reality is, people that tend to do surveys, not just in politics, but in all sorts of different things. I think we were saying off air, I was explaining that, you know, the overwhelming majority of money in the market research, the wider market research industry, is corporate money, looking at, you know, customer satisfaction and the reputation of corporate brands and that sort of thing, and doing that internationally. That is where the millions and millions of pounds get spent. Politics, you know, yes, there is money spent by political parties, but far less so. The point is that you're invariably trying to take the sample that you can get, and the most engaged people are the people that are taking these surveys, and therefore if the most engaged people have a slightly different view of the world than the less engaged people, then you've got a bit of a problem, haven't you? And I guess what this means for political polling is that it does seem that there is a certain type of small c conservative person in England, because I think it's fair to say that Scottish polling has been pretty effective in England, that are hard to reach by survey methodologies online and on the telephone. And we've always known that. That's always been the case. And there are approaches you can take to try and control for that in how you build your samples. And a lot of the pollsters are doing that now, following what happened in 2015. But it's an ongoing battle. And again, like I say, I think we've always got to be cautious about saying we've fixed it. And we've always got to be cautious about saying, right, we all agree now, all seven or eight pollsters that do this, that we've got the right answer. Because, again, as I said at the beginning, I think that kind of group think is not helpful.
Yeah, and I just sort of wheeling it all the way back around to Tony Blair at the beginning, I guess those type of people that you're saying is conservative with a small c who'd be hard to reach might also be the kind of person who was a slightly undecided Leave voter, who then may be swayed by what Blair said on Friday, but they're never going to come out and start jumping up and down and shouting about it, because no one likes to be seen to be changing their mind.
Well, I mean, that is certainly possible. I must say that I'm slightly sceptical about it, because another poll that we were looking at recently on the show was one about asking people if they had a favourable or an unfavourable opinion of Tony Blair. And 74%, can you believe it, said that they had an unfavourable opinion of Tony Blair. Just 14% said they had a favourable opinion. And, I mean, given those numbers, it won't surprise you to know that that transcends every demographic you can imagine, any sort of political allegiance and so on and so forth. I mean, I think that Tony Blair will speak to a Remain audience. He may help to galvanize some of the people on the Remain side to think maybe all is not lost and maybe we can take the fight on. I would sort of accept there may be some argument to that, you know, some people in the Labour Party, for example, that really kind of do want to challenge the result may decide Tony's right, we need to sort of fight back on this. I'm just extremely skeptical that there are Leave voters out there that voted Leave, haven't shown any signs of changing their mind yet, and it's only when former Labour Prime Minister Tony Blair intervened that they decided that actually they were wrong. I mean, just to give you one other stat from this poll from YouGov, 82% of Leave voters say they're unfavourable towards Tony Blair. So he may very well have the right message. That's for all the people to judge, but I'm not convinced he's the right messenger.
Yeah, I think the Brexit podcast timeline on Twitter would probably agree with you, because it was full of Tony Blair, and it just looked to make things more divisive than ever before, which kind of begs the question why he made the speech.
Well, I think first and foremost, to be honest with you, I think first and foremost, for whatever reason, you know, he's decided that he wants to have a role in British politics again. I guess as a result of the EU referendum and possibly the Labour Party's policy now being essentially to support the Leave vote. The bit I don't understand, just from editorialising a little bit and giving my own personal opinion rather than the polls, is how he's arrived at this particular point in time. You know, when he left office, he went away and he made loads of money advising various people in sort of slightly dodgy places in the world with slightly dodgy records on democracy. He also did his UN job, which people, you know, had a sort of wry smile on their face about, considering his role in peace in the past, shall we say. But the point is, he did lots of different things. And I don't think as a past prime minister, you can make money, or you can do the international statesman thing, or you can be involved in your domestic politics. I'm not sure you can do all of those things at the same time and do it credibly. So I think from his perspective, he probably just wants to intervene and to have a role as a former prime minister. And I do note that the Brexit bill is going to the House of Lords. So maybe he's doing it at a time when he thinks he can sway peers in the House of Lords to, to hold things up a bit, but that wouldn't be a good look either. The point is, really, fairly or unfairly, his reputation amongst UK public opinion is pretty weak. That's largely to do with the fact that his own side don't particularly like him, and I don't think he's going to be someone that shifts opinion in any significant way.
Yeah, that's pretty categoric. Thanks, Kieran. and just finally, if people want to find out more about Polling Matters podcast, where should they go?
So there's a number of places you can go. I guess one of the quickest ways to do it if you're on Twitter, is to follow me at Kieran Pedley. So it's KieranPedley. That's at Kieran Pedley. If you're not on Twitter, because all the links are there on my profile. But if you're not on Twitter, you can go to Podbean, which is the website where the podcast is hosted, and type in Polling Matters. If you've got iTunes, then we're on there. Similar, if you've got the podcast app on that, then you can find us, and likewise on several sort of Android apps as well. So we're in all the normal places you would expect to find podcasts, as you know, people that are listening to this will have found you. So either Podbean, find me on Twitter, or go on iTunes and Android, I'd say.
That's terrific. Thanks. We'll keep our ears open to see what's going to happen in the rest of the European election coming up with your insight. Thanks again, Kieran, for being on the show.
As always, thanks for listening. And if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice, so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.